pasting all my fading memorabilia into an old-fashioned book with microfiber pages that they'll send to my nearest living relation once I've given up the ghost. My great-grandniece. She lives way out in the asteroid belt, at an asteroid called Ceres, far enough away from the new morality and all their holier-than-thou jail guards. That's how I think of them. Jail guards. They call themselves doctors and nurses and even pastors and ministers of the Lord. They're nice as pie when they sweetly disconnect your pacemaker or pump you intravenously full of tranquilizers so you won't bother them with cries of pain in the night. But they're really guards in a jail that's as big as this country, from sea to shining sea. Or maybe they're more like orderlies in a great big nationwide insane asylum. I can remember the old days, back when I had just started teaching, back when the kids were free to play punch ball in the schoolyard, and sometimes to punch one of the other kids if they got into a scrap. I remember when they could roll in the dirt and tussle with one another to settle their argument, and then be pals afterward. But then I saw on TV that some cartoonist in Holland was put in jail because the government there was afraid his cartoons would offend Muslims. Freedom of expression? Forget it. You had to be nice to everybody. Don't give offense to any person or group, especially those who might blow up your apartment building. The schools were invaded by social workers and psychologists. They came to do good, to help the children avoid violence and shun evil thoughts. They organized all the sports activities. Kids shouldn't be allowed to just go out and play on their own. They've got to be controlled for their own good. They've got to have organized leagues and official statistics. And no name-calling. Nowadays, even if a kid raises her voice in the hallways, she's sent to the school psychologist to learn how to control her anger. And they bottle it up inside themselves all their lives, until sometimes it bursts out and people get killed. Like I said, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Nobody set out to create this dictatorship. Yes, that's what this is, a dictatorship. Benign, for the most part, but still a dictatorship. Not a police state, not exactly. They're much too clever for that, much too subtle. We still have elections, sure. Vote for the candidate of your choice, Tweedledum or Tweedledumber. And it took me so long to realize what was happening. I've got nobody to blame but myself. Nobody sat down and deliberately planned all this. It just happened, step by step, one good intention after another. Yes, I know the country was in an awful mess before the new morality brought us to true Christian righteousness. Students walked into schools with guns and killed people. 13-year-olds had babies. Drug gangs had more firepower on the streets than the police and felt perfectly free to shoot up their neighborhoods. More often than not, the police were part of the problem. So the people turned to God, to religion. The new morality led the way. There were lots of other religious groups too, but over the years, the new morality sort of absorbed them all. Little by little, incrementally, local associations tried to clean up their neighborhoods, make the streets safe and livable. Good people, earnest people. The local churches were natural focal points for them, meeting places, centers where they could make their plans and recruit others. New morality ministers showed up to help them, give them pointers and even funding, lead them on the path of righteousness. Knowing they were doing good, they could be stern, even ruthless. But it was all for the good of the community, after all. So a few bad apples got sent away, and one or two others were permanently tranquilized with deep brain stimulators. It was all for the best. We were doing God's work, and we knew it. Chapter 2. He dreamed of the space habitat again that night, and of Holly, the warmth of her, the joy of her. He had promised to return to her at the habitat in orbit around Saturn. But the next morning, the bureaucrats of the Employment Allocation Office had other ideas. The 40-something woman behind the desk had a patently phony smile pasted on her chubby face. Relentlessly cheerful, she was plump, with dimples in her face and elbows. I wonder where else, Tavallera thought as he watched her sitting at her desk, humming to herself while she studied her desktop screen. She worked in an actual office, a real room and not a cubicle. It was a small room, but it had a window that looked out on the new housing tracts that had been put up where the sports arena used to be. She wore a dark blue one-piece suit that almost looked like coveralls. On her left breast was the palm ring emblem of the new morality. A larger version of the emblem hung on the wall behind her desk chair, a pair of palm boughs bent into a circle. "I did my 2 years of public service," Tavallera said, hoping to get her to pay attention to him instead of whatever data she'd pulled up on her screen. Without taking her eyes from the screen, she sing-songed, "Yes, but you owe your community 2 more years, don't you? When I'm 50." Finally, she looked at him. Her eyes were deep blue, almost violet, Tavallera saw. Her smile stayed fixed on her round face while she spoke to him as if he were a kindergarten pupil. "Mr. Tavallera, you need to understand that the rules have changed since you left Earth. The greenhouse floods and the other climate shifts have forced us to require your public service commitment immediately. Your community needs you now, not 20 years in the future. But I want to go back." He stopped himself, but not in time. The woman's smile faltered momentarily, then flicked back on, but her voice hardened. "Back to Saturn. Back to that colony of misfit unbelievers and humanists? For shame, Mr. Tavallera. You're needed here. You got no right to force me to stay." She sighed heavily. "I'm afraid that's an old-fashioned attitude, Mr. Tavallera. We have a perfect right to require that you stay where you can do the most good for your fellow citizens. After all, it's God's work that you'll be doing." Tavallera said nothing, but he wondered who decided what was God's work and what was not. "And even if we should grant you a travel permit," the woman went on, back to her patronizing schoolteacher tone, "how would you pay for your transportation all the way out to Saturn?"
"I'll work my way on one of the supply ships."
"And how will you get a work permit?"
Tavallera saw where she was heading. Work permits were issued by the Office of Employment Allocation. Before he could think of anything to say, the woman put her smile on again and said sweetly,
"You have been assigned to the New Orleans Restoration Project. 9 doors down the hall on your right."
Restoration project, he wondered. New Orleans had been underwater since before Tavallera had been in grammar school.
9 doors down the hall on your right, the woman repeated. They're expecting you.
Numbly, Tavallera got up from the chair and went to the door, then hesitated and turned back slightly.
"Count your blessings, Mr. Tavallera. With your technical background, you could have been assigned to repairing infantry robots in Latin America."
Tavallera felt his insides go hollow. The army? They could assign me to the army?
Still smiling, the woman said, "The Lord loves a cheerful giver, Mr. Tavallera. Give your services cheerfully, and all will be well."
He nodded at her, but he was thinking, 2 years of mandatory service. 2 more friggin' years. I've got to figure a way out of this. He trudged unhappily down the corridor to the door labeled New Orleans Restoration Project. He rapped his knuckles on it once. No answer. He banged harder, and when there was still no reply, he pushed the door open and stepped into a large room filled with 2 rows of desks, all of them empty. There were blank computer screens on each totally bare desk, comfortable-looking swivel chairs, even trash baskets on the floor. All of them empty. A door at the far end of the room popped open, and a bright-eyed, red-headed young woman called,
"This way, Mr. Tavallera."
"Yep, they're expecting me, all right." Tavallera walked briskly along the aisle between the empty desks, while the redhead held the door and smiled at him.
"Nice weather for February, isn't it?" she said, as if they'd known each other for years. "No twisters yet?"
Tavallera nodded.